Welcome to the Creative Gap Podcast. Glad to have you here. And today we have another great episode. Let's welcome to the show cinematographer Nikosi Roma. Nikosi, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I've been loving what you're doing on YouTube. I think that's how I found you. I started getting interested in 16 mil and because I never grew up in the film world. So I never grew up shooting Super 8. I never grew up shooting film at all. Digital was kind of how I was raised in this industry. So, you know, I've seen a lot about film 16 mil and what it's been able to produce. And I started to want to educate myself. And you're probably one of the few, if not only, people that I actually really enjoy on YouTube that promotes film in 16 mil. And I think the content that you produce around it is really educational and entertaining. And I just love your style. And from there, I got to follow your work a little bit. And you create some amazing stuff, man. I'm really, really stoked to chat with you about it.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been a journey and a process. I'm like you, grew up in the digital world. So film was just like it's a whole new world. And I first got into film with, you know, shooting photography, and then just kind of got the bug of like, this feels so much better than shooting digital. And, you know, that progressed this way to wanting to shoot on film. So yeah, it's been a journey and a process. And out here, there's not a whole lot of film shooters. There's getting to be a few more. So I didn't have like a mentor or someone to like ask different questions to. So there's a lot of trial and error just getting set up. So a lot of what you're seeing on the channel and other people can see is just things that I'm learning and researching myself and just kind of trial and erroring. So I'm glad I can share the education based on all that.
Yeah. Did you grow up in the film world, like at all? Were your parents in the arts? Like, how did you find your path within this industry?
Neither one of my parents are in the film industry or connected whatsoever. My dad is an artist though. He's, it's more fine arts, some sculpture, really kind of multidisciplinary, painting, drawing, all those different things. And my mom, she's a writer. She has a journalism background. And so I guess the two of those things maybe just kind of, you know, leaked in and inspired me in a way. They got me my first camera when I was like 8 years old. Just one of those big VHS cameras. So I just started like shooting home movies and stuff. As a kid, just had a very active imagination, and a camera was just the way to put what was in my head out there. Even though, you know, you watch back, it doesn't translate whatsoever, but the memories are still there. Like, I can watch them back and I know exactly what I was thinking like when I'm watching that. So that kind of transportive nature is really really neat. But in terms of getting into like film as a career, that was a interesting roundabout way that, you know, everyone's path is totally different. There's no like one way, oh, this is how you get into it. Right. But mine was, I was working for a roofing company, and my dad was as well. We're both working for the same roofing company, and he did a roof for someone and started talking about to the homeowner about me a little bit. And I was interested in film, and this guy knew someone that was, you know, in film or whatever. Parker Rice is the name. I'll never forget his name. Okay. He invited me on to my first ever real film set as a production assistant. I was like I would hardly even call myself a production assistant. I had no idea of anything. I was just there just watching and randomly just getting handed things to do here and there. But I got brought into that film set, and I'm so glad I did. And looking back now, realizing that most everyone working on that set was like the people of like Colorado at the time, like up and coming, like making stuff. And a lot of them have since moved to LA and stuff like that. But during that time, this was like one of the last like passion project type things they did together. But I didn't know, obviously I'm just green, fully green, but I didn't know that. So I was just like a sponge, yeah. just kind of soaking it all up. Like, this is crazy. This is wild. Seeing all the lights, cameras, like everything. And yeah, I was completely overwhelmed, but not to the point of like, I don't want to do this. It was like, okay, I want to like be around this more so that this is not overwhelming to me. And this is something that I can kind of, you know, figure out if I can do it. Because I was wanting to tell stories, but I didn't know the actual process of like how these things are done and made. So off of that, I kind of just got the bug and met who would be the DP on my first short film, because I started directing first, and then a producer as well. And I don't know why they, you know, just wanted to talk to me or whatever and trusted me that I could actually do something, because I wrote a script like not probably within a year of that, and was like, I want to make a short film, I want to do it. And so they really helped bring everyone on board to make that happen. And yeah, so I directed my first short off of that. And I was like, okay, in that role, in more of a kind of like a creative leadership type of role, I felt really comfortable in. Like, I felt like that's what I was supposed to be doing. And I didn't know enough at the time that you don't just make a film, like you should learn all this other stuff first, but I didn't know any of that. So I just did it. And it worked out, and it was an amazing experience. And just, you know, it kind of helped fuel me and like solidify that, yeah, I can do this. I'm supposed to do this. Like, it's not just something in my head or that I think, that I should do. Like, it's actually what I should do. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. And just slowly, you know, building, transitioning, learning different things. I learned after, like, I did it, really.
Yeah, similarly, I kind of learned, you know, through the process of being on set, trial and error, and all those things. I'm always curious about people's stories in terms of transitioning from having a job to then becoming like a full-time filmmaker. What was that transition like for you? Was it tough? Did you do any preparation prior to you transitioning?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So, after I made the first film, I moved out to St. Louis with my wife to go help a pastor friend of mine. He was planning a church and he wanted someone to run like the media and stuff like that. So I was like, all right, cool. Like, I feel like I can do that. Let's do it. So we and my wife and I were just newly married. So we were like, all right, cool. It's a little adventure. Let's do it. So we moved and started doing that. And the first thing I did when I got there, I just went to like go pick up a job. Like, I'm just applying for stuff. Like, let's just figure out what I can do, because the church was kind of in a space where like it was like, are they gonna actually be able to hire me or not? I don't know. So I was going through that process and just, you know, going after it. I have to talk about my faith a lot, because it's like that's just who I am, you know. It's just part of my life and my relationship with God and everything like that. And my story doesn't make sense if I don't share about that. So I was praying at the time a lot, of just kind of seeking God on what I should do, between, you know, the film, between church, between just work. And I just got a, you know, I was applying for a job, and then I was praying about it, and I just didn't feel like an easiness about it. And it was weird, because I felt like God was like, you can do that if you want, like, go ahead, but like, I got something else for you right now. So I was like, okay, I definitely don't want to just do what I can do. I want to do what, you know, I should do. And in that time, it just looked like spending a lot of time just praying and seeking God and just being there for the pastor, his wife, like the church. A lot of things happen in the ministry that I'm not going to get into, because it's a whole other story, but it was like one of the wildest church experiences I've ever had. But ultimately, it was like my purpose in being there was to be a support to the pastor and his wife. And we did a ton of videos and stuff together. Like, I learned a whole lot in terms of like production and like just lighting and like doing all that stuff by myself. Like, that's when I really learned a lot. Making videos with him, but like the purpose of it was like, just, you know, he became my brother, and like we're still, you know, great friends to this day. So that was a whole strange experience, but awesome. I learned a lot coming back to Colorado, which is where I'm like, again, I'm based here now. And so the transition for me was kind of just went from doing the kind of odd jobs of, you know, working as an assistant camera and like working in different odd jobs and stuff outside of the film industry. Editing's been a thing that I've done a lot too. That's been mostly consistent, which is cool. But transitioning from like just doing AC work to being like, okay, I want to just be a DP and want to do that. That was very much kind of like a leap of faith that I wouldn't right. necessarily recommend people do unless they like can really just stick it out. Cause it's not, not, you said it's not easy. Like,
yeah,
not easy at all. But I knew like just from working, like people hire you based on what you do. And not necessarily what you want to do. So if you want to get hired for something, you have to do that thing. And so for me, I was like, okay, I want to direct, but I don't really want to direct other people's work because I had some experience with that and just wasn't, didn't feel right. So I was like, okay, cinematography is another leadership, creative leadership position that I just do well in that, in a creative leadership position, nothing about, you know, nothing wrong with, filling a role and just, you know, getting the job done, but like to be a part of like the actual storytelling process and building it and then guiding other people in that way, I just fit so much better in that role. Fun fact, my name means chief or leader I think it's Egyptian, but it's definitely African descent. Cool. And so like I've like wrestled with that a little bit, but like stepping in these roles, I'm like, okay, like it just fits better. It's not a matter of ego or like, I want to do that more. It's just, I just fit better in those roles. So transitioning from just, you know, being camera department, which is a lot of what I was doing, into being a DP was really much just kind of like cold turkey almost. Like I was like, I want to shoot film and I want to work on creative projects. I don't want to do corporate videos. I don't want to do talking heads. Like I want to do fun, creative narrative stuff. And so bought the camera, sold all my digital stuff, started just teaching myself on the process.
Fully committed.
Yes. Fully committed.
Wow.
I'm so thankful for my wife and her support and her like just understanding of the craziness, because it's like, it's difficult. Like it's difficult to struggle for something wondering if it's going to pay off. And not knowing if it will, but you have to keep going.
If you don't mind me asking, I'm getting married in a couple months. I've been with my fiance for 10 years now. So she's been through every part of my journey from when we were 15 till now 25.
And
from your perspective, I also have had like a similar experience of taking a leap of faith and having to have her believe in me. And you know, that is a difficult thing, especially going to like a freelance world where things can be uncertain. Yeah. What was it like, how important was it for you to have her as like a backbone for that transition period?
Oh, incredibly. I couldn't have done it without her. Like I can't do anything that I do without her. One, because she's a support for me, but then also with our kids, like she's always holding it down with them. So that's like amazing. But I will say that this might sound weird or wrong at first, but just hear me out. She's not really my backbone, but she's like supportive tissue, and God is our backbone. Like she hears the same things that I hear when God's telling us things, or you know, we're getting encouraging words from other people that can see and that believe like, okay, yeah, this is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're meant to do. Like she hears the same stuff I do. So we both hold on to that. And we both believe in that together because we are, I mean, we're one, like we are a team, we're locked in. So the decisions I make are also the decisions that she's making as well. So yeah, super vital, super important, for us to be on the same page. Couldn't do it without her. Like no way. She always makes sure I'm eating. She's always making sure.
That's
because I can forget to eat.
Yeah, that's perfect. When you said that you dropped all your digital gear, you went film and you wanted to do those very specific projects, how did you start to actually practically get into those projects? Because it's easy for us to say, oh, I want to do those creative projects and not have to do any of the corporate talking head interviews, all that stuff. What was it like actually like? How did you do that?
Yeah, these are great questions. I'm glad you're asking them because it's like, I don't like the fluffy stuff. I like the practical, like, how do you actually do this stuff? And I will say that's another one of those, like, there's many, like, everyone's path is going to be different. I started off with that first YouTube video, just talking about the camera. I filmed that thing. I tried to film it like two different times, sucked. And I just was too in my head, still get in my head a lot about things, but I filmed that video at like 3 in the morning. And I was like, just talking about this. Cause I'm like, I've wanted to do a YouTube channel for a long time, but didn't really have anything I really cared to talk about. So I was like, cool, I got a film camera. I like this. Obviously I'm invested in it now. Let me just, might as well just talk about it. So made that video. That is still like my highest viewed video on YouTube. But from that, just started being able to connect with people that were interested in shooting on film. Out here in Colorado, I haven't done a ton of work, but starting to do more work out here locally. But I just started kind of reaching out to people, just talking, seeing if, you know, anyone wanted to shoot something on film. And I was trying to take a lot of these opportunities to like do something passion project-y where it's like, okay, we can split the film cost. So I'm like, we're practicing together in a way. So I did a couple spec things, because that's the thing with film. Like, you can't just go out and shoot. Like, you have, it's costs every single time you're going to shoot something. So like, you have to just be invested in like what you're going to shoot. And I don't do a whole lot of test shoots, like here and there I will if I want to try something out, but largely like I got to test a lot on like early projects. And obviously I knew about cinematography going into it, and then it was just kind of adjusting for what's you have to do with film. So I'm very thankful for like the really early projects that were just kind of like run and gun test stuff, like let's just try something. But a lot of people that I've worked with have reached out to me from YouTube, like specifically YouTube or Instagram.
That's amazing.
My website for sure. But like, those are like two big places that people reach out from. And the people that I have worked with, I've worked with multiple times. And it's what I love about film is that the thing that really differentiates it for me is, and I'll say this anytime I'm asked, is the intentionality. Like, why are people shooting film? And there's some common factors that really that people have that just kind of is a what's the word, like a qualifier in terms of what you're working on. Like, I've done like one kind of documentary thing for just this project that just had too much money, they just wanted film, so that was cool. But like the narrative, the music video, the more creative side of things, like the people that want to shoot on film, I connect really well with, because their intention behind it is usually aligned with my intention when it comes to story and why I like shooting on film in general. And so I've been able to create really good relationships with people that are wanting to shoot on film. And again, within that intentionality, like, sure, I've had people that just want to do like a one-off thing and then it's just kind of whatever. Then other people, it's like they want to be true filmmakers. Like, they want to make features. And that's what I want to do as a cinematographer. And as a director, like, I want to make features and TV shows and longer form narratives. And so film as a qualifier has allowed me to connect with some of those people that have the same goals. And so that's been really, really cool to just have flipping the switch from having to reach out all the time to people like, hey, can I shoot this for you? Or I can do this, I can do that, which is a lot of the kind of, you know, the grind of freelance. You got to put a lot out there versus, you know, still putting a lot out there through like YouTube or different avenues, but then people are reaching out because they see that and they want that. And I'm hoping I can prove, I guess, that I'm capable of doing it like through my work. But that's largely how it was, just reaching out here and there, trying to build some local network, and then also networking through YouTube, which doesn't seem like it's a place you can actually get work from, but like it's just a giant web of people out there, you just never know. So
I think it's admirable how courageous you were to niche down that hard. Did you ever feel like there were moments where you might be like missing out on projects because that project that came to you didn't want to shoot film? Like, were there certain struggles where you just felt like you were missing out on things, or was niching down like you knew that I know I'm going to lose projects. I know I might lose some things here and there, but this is ultimately where I want to be. So I'm just going to start here and kind of build from this position?
First of all, admirable is a great, you know, I appreciate that. I would say crazy, but admirable.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. To make the decision of niching down.
I'll say crazy too. I'll retract and say crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's a little bit crazy. But yeah, definitely. You know, when I started getting hit up for different work that I was doing, like AC stuff, which I know it's a lot of corporate stuff out here. And so a lot of AC stuff is really easy. Like yeah. I took quite a few like early on, like as I was making that transition. And then it was like, I think on one set, someone reached out, you know, asked me to hop on. I was like, okay, cool. I could just get on, swap batteries and lenses, whatever, and just sit around. But it was in that sitting around, like, you know, you're making, you know, $700 a day or whatever. And I'm just like sitting there and I'm like, this kind of sucks right now. Like, I don't feel fulfilled at all in this. Like, yeah, the money is good. Like, the money is great and money is absolutely necessary. But I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, it just felt like, I think for freelancers, especially creative freelancers, like the 9-to-5 is like the hell, like right. that we can imagine.
Yes.
Like, I don't ever want to be stuck in an office working a 9-to-5, right? That's what that felt like being there. I was like, what is the difference between this versus being in an office right now, like 9-to-5, if it's not what I actually want to do and if it's not what I feel like I can contribute to the best of my abilities, like on something, like if I'm just gonna be sitting here, like, I might as well be, you know, a cashier at Walmart or something. Like, I'm just, you know, the money's good, but it was like at a cost of not feeling fulfilled. And like that is, I guess, a little bit crazy because like you need to work, you need to eat, you need to do these things. But like you can go hungry for a little bit and you'll be okay. Like, you'll be fine. So in that decision, it was like kind of a sacrifice. Like, all right, if I want to do what I really want to do, like I have to just do that. Because if I keep on trying to do this, that, and the other, like, I'm never going to do that thing. Like, you think about anyone who's great and known for something, it's because that's what they do. They don't do something else. And, you know, that's just kind of how I think. And maybe it's just what I had to tell myself. I don't know. But that's ultimately, you know, the decisions that I just had to make was like, okay, having to turn down the job that's going to be paid well, but it's not something that I'm wanting to advertise that I do anymore, you know, was difficult. But as I continued and start getting, you know, the jobs that I want to do with the day rates that I want to make, and it's like, this is what I want to do. Like, this is awesome. Like, and this is what's worth it for me. Became a lot easier to say no to,
absolutely,
you know, the AC, the PA, like these different kind of things. So yeah, hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of filmmakers, myself included, have to go through that phase of kind of shedding your skin of like the old you, in a sense of like, for me, I did a little bit of crewing. I did some AC. I did a little bit of gaff work. But similar to you, I think you said creative leadership. That's something that's like a great term that I don't think I really thought of necessarily, but it's a great way to explain how I feel as a DP. Like, creative leadership is, it really is perfect. And I feel so much more fulfilled than doing the gaffer, you know, grip AC work. And a lot of what I did before DPing was actually a lot of PAing. So as I was growing as a DP, I was simultaneously PAing. So it was like a weird bottom of the food chain technically. And right. then, you know, DP. So it was like one day I was DPing, the next day I was PAing. It was a very weird thing, but then eventually you just had to commit to saying, this isn't who I am anymore. I have to let go of this. I might lose some things, but it's for the better. And this is truly what I want to do. So yeah, I think it's great to hear that you also had to go through that similar thing. Cause I know a lot of filmmakers personally that are going through that right now and are struggling a little bit to actually start committing to saying no. I think, yeah, saying no is a really difficult thing. I think it's great. And I think I want to transition a little bit into some more practical stuff that I'm curious about selfishly, about how to shoot 16. Cause I still, I think it's partially because I haven't done it yet. I try to do all this research and understand it beforehand, but I just haven't done it yet. What for you was like the biggest learning curve for shooting 16?
I'd say not knowing what your image looks like after you shoot it, at least for, you know, a week or whatever, not having the ability to instantly see what it is that you shot and how it turned out. So you can't make adjustments like as you go. If you can't really know what it looks like, it's just all got to be, you know, I hate that term, trust the process, but like you actually do have to trust the process of just trying different things out exposure wise specifically to see how the film reacts when you get it back. And then you kind of build on that. So you build a trust in the literal process of shooting on film to where, you know, okay, I know I'm aware of how this is going to react when I do this or that, you know, in terms of exposure. And then it's easier to make decisions. Like you just build a confidence kind of within the medium itself when you know how it's going to react and how it's going to respond without having to even have a monitor. So that was probably the biggest learning curve going from digital, where you always got a monitor, like, okay, let's see how this looks. Sure. And you see it as you're shooting it, versus films. Like you see the real world, like through the optical viewfinder, like you see what it is that you are shooting, but like you don't see the final thing, you know? So that was probably the biggest learning curve.
Yeah, because I'm shooting, I'm looking at a monitor that has a LUT on it. I'm looking at like an almost final image all the time.
Right.
So I can imagine that being a total change of pace and just, I feel like I'd get nervous. Like, do you get nervous like in that week time span of like, oh, this, I hope it works. I hope it looks good.
I used to get kind of nervous because I was like, yeah, you just don't know. And you just hope that it turns out right. But again, I've come to trust the process more now that like, I know, you know, if I overexpose, it's going to be just fine. I know, oh, my, you know, I'm balanced well on set now so that I don't have to be nervous because I'm aware of how it's going to respond so that it becomes more predictable for sure.
Mm. And when you're on set, your tools for measuring exposure, are you mainly using light meters? Is that your main tool that you're using?
Yeah. I always have my Sekonic on me. Mm. That's pretty much all I use. The spot and incident meter. I usually just use the spot meter. I don't use the incident meter too much. I work with some pretty good gaffers and they'll use light meters as well. And so we just kind of build rapport and stay on the same page that way. Mm. But yeah, light meter is like also an entirely optical, you know, experience. So it's like, okay, you're seeing light as it is in real life, not through filters or monitors or anything like that. And so that I think has also just continued to build some more confidence as a DP to where I can just see the light now. And like, you know, digital, you see the monitors, like you can tell like, oh, if this looks good or not, and you can just kind of adjust that way. Right. But without that, it's a lot of just looking with your eye, checking with your meter, seeing where things are at. And sometimes depending on the film stock you're shooting, like it looks like really bright and really overexposed or really flat, but like knowing how the stock's going to react, it's like it's going to look good, it's going to be fine, don't worry about it. Like it's going to turn out well. That's a fun thing. And a little caveat, I guess, is like working with some gaffers or people that don't shoot on film.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And yeah. Having them get adjusted to that process is weird. And there's been, you know, not often, but like some tension sometimes where like I say something that I want done and they don't fully trust it. And so they want to do it a different way. And I'm like, just do it this way. Like it's that I know what I'm doing at this point. Like I know what I'm doing now, even if it doesn't make sense, just trust it, just go with it. And yeah, so that's been kind of a fun thing, because we're in the digital age, so there's people that I've worked with that just have never shot a film before, and that's like,
for sure,
you know, just have to ease them into it a little bit and get them on the same page and just trust the process.
Yeah, for real. I think that's I work with a couple people that have experience with film, but not many, to be honest with you. And I'm curious as to your path as a DP besides film. Like, while you're simultaneously growing and learning film, there's also a ton of other aspects of being a DP that you have to learn as well. Like, as you're growing, what were some initial challenges that you had that you faced as a growing DP that you now feel more confident in? But I'm just curious as to what hurdles you had to kind of jump over in the beginning stages.
Sure. Terminology, like what things mean, and just the science and math of light, not understanding that whatsoever. And there's still aspects that I don't understand. I think that the toughest thing was just not knowing what I needed to know and didn't need to know. And how I approached solving those things was just one, just trying to educate myself through, YouTube, books, whatever. But then also just like different Facebook groups and stuff, just asking questions. So like I've asked like, what should a DP know on set versus, what should a gaffer know? Like, how should that relationship work best? And like I asked that in like a gaffer specific group. And this is not even that long ago. Like, I just want to know, like, should I know exactly what lights are called and exactly what lights I want? Or should I just know, the image I want to create in my mind and then, be able to articulate that. And largely from what everyone shared with me and even gaffers that I work with, they're like, you're a good DP. They're like, you do what you're supposed to do. Like, you tell us what you want and we make that happen. And they kind of reinforced in me something that I've kind of always strongly felt, which is like just knowing what it is that you want to create before you set out to create it. So that way you know when you actually get there and it doesn't just adjust on the fly. So I'm good at that. I'm good at knowing what I want. The articulating it was and is the part that I'm still working on. So just, and it's hard when you're working with lots of different crews because everyone's kind of got a little bit of a different lingo. So it's like really locking in with like your solid group of people or core groups of people. And then this is something that I'm implementing now, is like to get on board with the same terminology so that when I'm saying something, you're getting it. And if you, receive input a certain way that, dictates, oh, move the light this way, let me know so that I can register and then be able to communicate that way. Like, I think all of filmmaking, the biggest tool is just communication. Like, if you can communicate, like you're gonna be just fine. Have the vision and the creative leadership positions and communicate it. Like, have to be able to communicate it. So that was the biggest challenge. And it's still something I'm working on, is just learning to actually articulate what it is in my head, because it's clear in my head. Like, I know what I want and I know when I get there, which I think gaffers can trust that because they don't feel like they're just moving lights around for no reason. Like, obviously, you're still going to have, oh, let's put that up. Okay, strike that. It's not what I want. But it's better than I don't, whatever. Like, sure, that looks good. Like, no, be precise.
Yeah, I think the like gaining confidence as a DP is a really interesting thing to notice within yourself. Like, going onto certain projects, you notice that maybe, I mean, at least for me, I start to get a little bit more confident in certain aspects and understanding what I really want. And I think I really started to notice that I was kind of growing when the way I was communicating with my G&E team was less fixture dependent. I think in the beginning for me, my lack of confidence in my own ability made me feel that I had to be so specific in what I wanted to to I guess overcome the anxiety of thinking that I didn't know what I was doing. So by telling them exactly what I wanted to the fixture, it made me feel empowered, like I knew what I was doing, when in reality, I was limiting that person, that team, with their creative ability. And I think since then, my confidence has grown to the point where I rarely talk about fixtures unless it's something very specific. And I try to allow for more artistic and creative expression from my G&E team. I think that's a major difference that I notice within myself.
Oh yeah, that's huge. How did you kind of start coming about that transition? Was it just working with like some of the same guys and just kind of getting comfortable with one another? Or was it something you were like, I don't actually have to know what fixture, like I can let them pick. Yeah. How did you actually,
I think it's a little bit of both. I in Philly where is kind of like my hub, even though I travel all over and work with crews wherever, I have like a group of couple of G&E guys that I work with pretty regularly. And I feel like often I'll ask them for feedback, just like, how am I doing? Like, is there anything that I could be like improving upon? And I think I remember one of them saying like, you know, you don't have to tell me exactly what fixture all the time. I think we've worked enough where I kind of understand what you're going for. And as long as you can work on describing your vision and intent or intentionality, that will enable me to be able to get you what you want and still make me feel like I'm a part of the creative process. Right. And, you know, similarly with, you know, just hearing people explain that, I think on this podcast, maybe a year ago, I had like this pretty good, you know, big DP to the point where he was working on like, you know, really great projects. And I asked him the same question and he explained to me about like how he was doing it and that he wasn't super fixture dependent. I just realized that I think as you grow, it's just something that you need to overcome. Mm. And I think I just tried to put more mental focus in on that while I was communicating. Like instead of just like blankly communicating on set, because sometimes you're in the zone, you just like spur out things, like just, it just comes out. I think I tried to really focus on not being that person. And eventually it got to the point where I don't even really talk about fixtures that much anymore. Like I'll get a list from my gaffer. Sometimes I want to do specific things, but I think it's also helped me get better images too, because they know so much more than me. Like all they do every day is lighting, grip. I don't do that every day. So like they're able to present better solutions than I could even think of.
Yeah, that's so good. I think a lot of that insecurity in the beginning is like, you're the thought process like, I'm the DP. I need to know everything and exactly what, like exactly. I need to be the most knowledgeable. Where it's like the more experience you get, it's like the ego of like, if they're doing the lighting, then they're like the DP and I'm not really the DP, but it's like, no, like chill. Like your main job as a DP is to communicate the director's vision. Like it's creative leadership. Like it's not knowing all the fixtures. It's not being the best camera operator. It's not any of those things. It's just being able to lead a team towards a singular goal and objective. And like, you have to, just like the director, like I think it was Ron Howard. This is like the director is like the keeper of the story. It's like the DP is like, also the keeper of the story, but like the technical side of it, like how does that actually get the keeper of the vision? Like how does that become executed? How's that executed correctly without someone in that role that can articulate it? So yeah, you should know as much as you can, but like, yeah, when it comes down to it, it's just other people are way better at everything that you want to do as a DP. So it's like, okay, let them be good at that. Just you're on my team. I just want to point you in this direction. Like, you know what I mean? I don't have to be the quarterback and the wide receiver. Like, you just go. that's dope to hear.
I'm curious as to know if you feel similarly, if you had similar experiences. I think DPs also have to communicate in like a couple different types of manners. Like you talk to your G&E camera team one way, and then you have to maybe relay that information to your director. But maybe that director isn't so well versed in the technicality. Mm-hmm. So you have to like explain what you're doing in a whole new way. And then sometimes you also have to explain what you're doing to like client and agency, which is a, for me on the commercial side, a whole nother way of communicating. Do you find that in your experience, you've had to learn how to communicate your vision like differently depending on who you're speaking to?
Oh, 100%. That's like 90% of the job, just communicating the same thing to multiple different people in a way that they can actually receive it and then take action on it if action is required or just understand it. So I think being also like a screenwriter and director helps a bit in terms of just being able to understand the story. My brain works really well, in a non-linear fashion. So like I can read a script and then like just, you know, ingest it so that when we're on set and we need to shoot things out of order, or we might need to like pick and choose a scene here or there. Like I know exactly where we're at and I know exactly like what's supposed to be done and said. So much to the point that I've actually had to like step back a time or two when I know the exact moment that came before and the exact moment that's coming afterward in the story. And like, I could literally tell the actor, this is where we're at right now. This is what you need to do, because I just know. And the director might still be catching up because they, along with the actors, have gone through the script linearly. So like they kind of have it in a flow, like this thing flows this way. This is how the story goes, which is true. But to be able to chop it up, you can get lost in the moment sometimes, to where you kind of have to like slow down, articulate, okay, let's figure out where we're at. So like I've had to get better at that, like not just being like, okay, this is where we're at, let's do this, and just like, okay, let's get everyone caught up, but like to communicate it to different people. Like I'm mostly working with directors, not so much like agencies and stuff like that, or clients. But
lucky
producers, directors, communicating with them is nice. To, you know, we get on the same page up front, talk about what we're doing, and then I always try to communicate just in terms of story. Again, being a screenwriter and director myself, it's, I think, easier to talk in that way. To where if I'm making a suggestion, it's always in tune with the story. Like I'm not just going to say, let's do something because I think it would be cool. I'll say, let's do something because I think it's going to be impactful to the story in this way. And then they can either, you know, agree, disagree, or if they want to present something to me and they're like, I want to kind of do this or that, then if, you know, we can talk about that and I'll know from a perspective of the story, like that's going to have this effect. And if that's what you want, let's do it. But if that's not the effect you want, let's come up with something different. So it's like directors, stories, and, you know, blocking, performance. And then with Genie, it's usually just more technical, but you know, a lot of Genie, like they are very creative people too. Like they get when you give a creative direction, that's like, I want it to feel like this or something, like that's like cinema. Like it's based on how something makes the audience feel. And so like your Genie, like they're literally the first line of the audience. Like they're experiencing it for the first time too in their creation of it. So like giving them a creative note of like, I want this to feel spacey, or I want this to feel beautiful, or I want this to feel whatever. Like they totally get that and can articulate that to like an actual, you know, technically actionable step. So like, I don't even try to get too technical with them either. Like sometimes I will when it has to be specific, but other times I can communicate feelings and things as well that the director will communicate. I can communicate that with them. It's just, let's achieve it this way. Maybe just put them in a ballpark direction of how I want to achieve that. What does beauty mean to me in this scene? It feels like, you know, butterfly lighting, or it feels like, you know, romantic, like kind of moody. Like it's like, just depends on the setting and the scene, but like communicating that to them is just, it's really not as complicated as I think I would make it out to be sometimes. Like when I really think about it, it's like, okay, they get it. Like they're artists too. They totally get what these things mean.
Absolutely.
It's just pointing them in a direction usually.
You mentioned that sometimes you are so deep into the script, you know every detail because you come from a writing director background. I'm curious, have you developed a certain process in pre-production when you read a script that helps you as a DP kind of just understand the script better? I think that's something I'm learning as I'm starting to get more into narrative, is how do I actually read a script as a DP? Because in my head, I'm always thinking about lighting, camera, but should I be thinking about story first, like characters? Like I'm still working on my development of how to do that properly.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. One note that I got from, I reached out to Xavier Kirchner, I think his name is pronounced. I don't want to butcher that because I haven't heard it out loud yet. Talented cinematographer. But I just sent him an email because I was like, I just want to see if I can just learn something from this guy, because a lot of what I'm trying to gain now is not like the technique, but like just the mindset you need to have in certain positions. So I was just asking him about that, just humbly, genuinely just asking him about it. And one thing he said about approaching stories as a cinematographer is like connecting and learning with the director, learning their story and why they want to tell it. And that will influence so much of your decisions as a cinematographer too. And I 100% agree with that. I think if you connect with a director and like get to just hear their story and like, why are they wanting to tell this and what it means to them, that's going to influence a lot of decisions technically as well. In terms of actually going through the script, I read through the script multiple times. One, just to read it and just to see if it catches me, if I like it, like if I enjoy it. Because if I don't believe in the story, like I would do it a disservice to attach myself to it.
Of course.
So I just read through it as an audience versus like, just, is this something I want to see, you know, be a part of? Is it something that I feel like I can actually contribute to? Is another thing. I think that can get overlooked as a cinematographer, because I think at a certain level, a lot of DPs can do a lot of the same things. Technically, like can achieve the same shots. So then it just comes down to like, do you connect with the story? Do you feel like you can add to it in a way, and not just with technique, but like personally, like can you put yourself in the story in a way that's going to be palpable? And this is all kind of like fuzzy talk, whatever. Like, how's that practical, right? It's like, I don't know how it's practical yet.
No, but it makes sense. Right. It makes perfect sense. Like practically for me, I'm in pre-production of a short film that I'm doing next month. And the reason I said yes to it was because the story, there were elements of it that actually related to my life and things that actually happened to me. So I was able to understand like the perspective of what that character was kind of going through.
Yeah.
And I was able to talk to the director in a way from like of like understanding like what the story, like where she was coming from. So I get where you're coming from there. I think that's really important.
Right. It's perspective. And I think that's truly what we as cinematographers add to a story is perspective. Like we're creating perspective within the story. And if the story resonates with you and your own perspective, then that's going to translate to different creative technical choices than someone who doesn't connect with it and doesn't share that same perspective.
Similar topic, but move to your new film that's in post, I believe, Method.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because I've been seeing a little bit, like some previews of it, like stuff on your story. I think you've talked about it a little bit, potentially on YouTube, I think I've seen. Tell me about the conception of this project, because you wrote it as well. You co-wrote it?
Yeah. So Method is what's in post-production is a proof of concept short film that we made, that we adapted from a feature script. And when I say we, I'm talking about myself and my partner, brother, like brilliant, amazing director, producer, writer, Ryan Stephen Holly. Love that guy to death. He's just an amazing human being and just amazing creative talent. He's written over like 15 features, multiple TV shows, a couple novels.
Come
like
on.
The dude is like a true writer. Like, I don't know if I've met anyone that's like as prolific as he is, and not just writing to write, like genuinely amazing writer. Like he's challenged me the most as a cinematographer to try to think about, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, but there are some words that no picture will do justice to. And he's challenged me in that in reading some of the things he's written. I'm like, I don't know how I would create an image to this that would do it as much justice and like serve its purpose as well as the how it is written. Because the way it's written impacts me so strongly that like, how do I translate that to an image that someone else can see it and feel the same way? That's the kind of caliber I'm talking about. I partnered with...
What a great relationship to have with somebody.
Bro, it's insane. It's amazing. I thank God for it every day because, just so much has come, so much fruitful. So it's been so fruitful. Our relationship has been so fruitful and creatively, professionally, and also just personally, just being able to connect with someone on the same wavelength.
That's amazing. It's so rare. That's rare. It's insanely rare. Like that.
Insanely rare. Like that's, I'm so grateful. Like every day I tell you, like it's amazing to have that kind of creative partnership and just personal relationship with another human being. We developed Method over probably like 2 years now. Started with just a kind of simple idea I had, and just thinking about, you know, where I was at in my life, and just sometimes just random thoughts will come to me, just creative things. And I don't know if it's a story I want to run with or just thought to just, you know, save for later. And it started like that, just a string of thoughts and thinking about acting and like how actors relate to just like the general, you know, population of people. Like, I think everyone kind of acts in, is an actor in their life in one way or another, you know, whether it's a family member you have to act like you like, what you really don't, or like, you know, a situation that you play a strong face, but it really hurts you. Like, you're not being truthful. And I think that's what acting is. Like, it's weird because like acting is like digging so deep into something that you present like a truth that people can receive, but like none of it's real. And so just thinking about that led me to just think about these thoughts of like identity and reality and like truth and a lot of really deep thoughts. And then it was when Ryan and I really started connecting and thinking about this story that it started to get fleshed out to be something that could actually be received as like a linear narrative. And so the story of Method is where it stands now in the feature and like also in the proof of concept is it's a visualization of an actor's process of going in and out of character and the dangers of like getting lost in between. But essentially it's a metaphor for just life in general and how identity is so important and like losing yourself or, you know, sacrificing morals to serve certain purposes and attain certain things, how that negatively impacts you in life. And so it's really just a story about identity and being true to yourself, but told through, you know, the perspective of a method actor. So within Method, the proof of concept, I'm going to talk about that specifically now. One, it was really hard to distill the big vision into a you know, 10, 15 minute short, because it's a very expansive and a very deep story that follows an actor in Hollywood. It's kind of a fall from grace, and then he's returned back home to family to try to pick himself back up and figure out who he is. And then it's got a mentor-mentee relationship between him and like a local theater director where he's really, theater director's really challenging him to uncover like who he is, like uncover the truth of like who he is. And so that leads to, you know, childhood traumas and things like that, that really unearth part of his character that he never knew that he had. So it's a psychological drama in the vein of like a Black Swan or like a Whiplash. Like those are like two big references for it.
Love that.
It's an amazing story. We're very excited about it. The proof of concept was again, tough to distill down, but because of the scope of the story, we're like, how do we capture, you know, a hint of that scope within the proof of concept. So some of the things you've been seeing on my story that I'm talking about on Instagram is like Gideon is a protagonist, shows up for an audition with a theater director, and he's challenged to, you know, unearth his darkest secrets basically in that moment. And so the concept of Method, we created this visualization process called Method Mode, which is where Gideon is transported into different characters. And in that transportation, like the world around him changes and he becomes these different characters. So within the proof of concept, we had a scene where he goes into character to deliver a monologue as a World War I soldier. And so that was something that we played around with, like, should we try to do that in the proof of concept? That's going to be really difficult. It's going to be really expensive, but we're like, we have to, because this is the immersion we want to create within the story, is to show the entire world transform and the entire character transform. So initially we just had written World War I soldier delivers this monologue. Cool. But our lead is he's an African-American actor. And I was thinking about World War I and we're like, I don't really recall too many Black soldiers in World War I. Like, it just is kind of odd. So
interesting. Yeah.
In that, down that line of thinking, like it's a relatively small part of like the whole story. But within the story, he's delivering a monologue from one of his favorite movies, which is a fictional movie in the universe, about a World War I soldier. And so this just shows how deep this is, right? In that process, like, well, it's a movie about a World War I soldier that's Black. Like, it should be based on some kind of like real thing, which led us to discover the Harlem Hellfighters, which was a, you know, all African-American troop that fought during World War One under French command, because the U.S. didn't even want them to fight under, you know, American command. So just a ton of history in there, but like it enriched the story so much. And the actors we got to portray some of these soldiers within the film were like so geeked about doing that, because these, you know, these soldiers have never been portrayed like on screen, like in a film before. So it's like, this is a first to do something. And so that entailed like, you know, getting uniforms, getting helmets, like getting, you know, all the gear, like getting rifles made, because like you literally can't get those rifles anywhere. So we had to get them 3D printed and made. It's right. Insane, like the amount of work that went into just doing a portion of that. But it's like all just to convey the realism. And I haven't even mentioned the trench yet. We built a trench, like a literal accurate World War One trench.
Oh man.
And I know like now why you should never try to do a period piece on an indie budget, but it was so worth it. It was so incredibly worth it. And I think I might've sent you some of those. If not, I'll send you some images of that, because it was insane.
Okay, great.
A creative producer, Waylon Kane, he basically took charge on that. He was very adamant that like, we can do it. He's like, I know people with equipment, like got to find the land, like all this stuff. Like he was like, we can do it. And so he led the charge on like the actual building of it. We had a World War One consultant, Nathan, who basically oversaw everything, like brought us sandbags, like the bullet shells and casings, all this stuff, like just to make it real.
That's so cool.
And just like that was a childhood dream moment for me, because I used to make a bunch of little war home movies as a kid. And like in my mind, it was real. And so like watching it back, I'm like, yeah, this is, you know, for like pillow cushions and sofas and whatever and Nerf guns. But like, it was real. Like I was in it. And this was like, I was actually in it, like in the trench with people fully dressed up as soldiers. Mm-hmm. Like we got, you know, machine guns and rifles and all this stuff, like walking through a trench. It was just like so surreal to be a part of that. But that's like an element of the film. Like that's not the entirety of just the proof of concept. Like, so you can see how just something so small, so expansive,
absolutely,
which just speaks to one, the caliber of the writing of the story, and then just the story itself, like the scope of what we're trying to do just to create immersion for our audiences to like go with this character to these places. So he goes into character, but then he also goes, the method mode is a gateway into characters, but it's also a gateway into memories and realities that he hasn't experienced yet, that leads to like deeper truths of who he is. And in his character allows him to uncover these kind of revelations that help him out in life, which I think we all need to have. So I'm talking a lot about it, but it's obviously the biggest thing that's I've ever done in my career so far.
Is it the most fulfilling project you've done so far?
Oh yeah, 100%.
You think?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. I love
that. See it come to life is just amazing.
Because I never really experienced the writing process too much. I write a little bit, but never to the extent of it actually becoming anything more than like a YouTube video or something. So I wonder what is the challenge of like looking at a script with your partner and being like, okay, this is ready. Like how do you decide when a script is ready?
Honestly, I think your deadlines that you set dictate when you have to shoot it. Cause I don't think it's ever ready.
Like physical deadlines.
Yes. I don't think it's ever truly ready. Cause we were making adjustments like up until like, you know, the day basically of things we wanted to do. because it's just, the story just kept expanding in ways that we didn't think about at the time. And like, as you live with it and as you connect with other artists that are going to be a part of it, whether it's the actors, the production designers, you know, the costume, wardrobe, whatever, like everyone has different ideas that just adds. And it's amazing how that transforms the story in a way. And so you might want to do something different. And that, you know, that means just making adjustments to the script. But like when to like put it down and be like, okay, I'm done with this. Like it's just gotta be a conscious decision you make. Like, okay, I'm done. It hits all the points that I was trying to make. I think that's the biggest thing. Like it gets me point A to B, the end, it hits all the points that I want to make. Like that's done. Like that's it serves its purpose. It's like done, but like again, when it's finished, yeah, it's you're gonna keep making adjustments. Like if the story really is speaking to you, like if it's alive, like if it's moving, like there's gonna be things that are just jumping out at you all the time as it just kind of marinates, like, oh, this and that and this and that. But yeah, you get, it's having a hard deadline of like, either you're going to shoot it or you're going to be done writing it. Like setting that deadline will like make you kind of feel like you have to be done at that point.
So I know you talked about the trenches a little bit and that kind of being like a childhood dream of yours. Were there any other moments during filming where you were like really memorable moments for you? I'm curious.
I think just the entire process was memorable in that it was all the elements that I enjoy of filmmaking and then I enjoy in just personal life combined. One, we're making great, amazing work that stemmed from myself, that stemmed from Ryan. That was amazing, just to bring that to life. The crew that came on board was all people that just wanted to be there and wanted to be a part of it. So that was amazing, because when crew feels like family, it's the best. And then speaking of family, I had actual family like on board. Like my dad and my brother worked on the rifles to make them look like accurate. It's insane the work they did on them, because they were 3D printed. And then my cousin and his girlfriend flew in from Chicago, and they're both in the fashion realm. And we needed costume designers. And no one locally was like interested, because it's like, again, mostly corporate commercial. Like they just weren't interested. So I was like, okay,
yeah,
forget you guys. All right. I'm going to get some people that like want to be a part of this to keep the energy up. And so I hit up my cousin and his girlfriend, and they were like, this sounds cool. Like, yeah, we want to be a part of it. They had never done costume design for a film before, but like the way they elevated the piece, it was amazing. Like it was 3 days and it was insane. Like to shoot everything in 3 days, we had a scene at a theater with this, it's almost like a cult like theater group. Like we went really A24 with this thing. And so the way they're dressed is super like flowy and like Kanye Westy, but like dystopian a little bit. Like it's interesting. It's like these tones of white. And like, so my cousin Blaine and his girlfriend Ashley, like they designed and like made all their outfits. And it was like, just is perfect. Like it was something that I didn't even think about, like how much that would elevate the piece. But like they came and they were just grinding like nonstop the weekend they were here. My cousin is insane. Like driving out for World War One Day, he was like making adjustments to like some of the uniforms, like sewing. And he like stayed up all night the night before working on stuff. Cause it's just them two. We should have had a team of like at least five costume, you know, designers. We just had them two. And like, he's in the seat and he's literally falling asleep between like stitches, like literally just falling asleep and then keeps going. And that's what, like, I looked at him and like, I wish I would have took a photo. Cause that's what I knew. I was like, we are cut from the exact same cloth. Like we will do what we're passionate about until we literally cannot anymore. So like, yeah, just those elements made it just the most enjoyable experience working with insanely talented actors. Our lead was cast from like over 700 submissions, and just phenomenal person, like connected and resonated with the story in such a way that was like, it's literally like a spiritual connection. Like he was writing things about the character just based on what he felt like he should flesh him out. And it's like stuff that's actually in the feature. That's like details that like this, he could not have known about the character. And it's not like generic stuff either. So it's like insane how he knew that. And then Don Harvey, the phenomenal Don Harvey, this guy is a talent and it's just a joy to be around. Like the first, I guess, really known actor that I've worked with on set. And so he was on board just to absolutely just, he plays the theater director and he just knocked it out of the park. Just, it's just fascinating to see him transform into character and like just deliver and then just be like this amazing, like joyful human being afterward. It's like just to see that process was really fulfilling for me.
Hearing all of that is amazing. I'm I think another thing that I'm curious about that I think could also be beneficial for people that are in a similar space of wanting to create like an indie short or even features, right. What are some of the challenges you faced during that process? Or like looking back on it, what are some things that maybe you would have done differently?
I can't really say I would have done anything differently, to be honest, because there could have been a lot of things. We could have had like 10 more people on our crew and it would have ran really smooth. Like it ran smooth, but like it would have ran smoother. But what we did with the resources that we had was like the absolute maximum I think anybody could do. Like genuinely, I don't think there could be a better project made with the resources, the time and limitations that we had. And I say that confidently because I know how absolutely maxed out every single person was, but everyone was like so about it. Like every person on the crew said, this is the coolest right. project they've ever been a part of. And like, I knew that going in, I didn't advertise that to them.
That's a great but feeling.
Like, they all said that. And that to me meant so much because I was like, I don't want to make something that's a waste of people's time. I want them to feel like they're part of something really special. And for them to know that this is not where this is going to end, but like we're going to move on to like actually get this made as a feature, I think really helped them to see and believe in it as much as we did. And then obviously everything on top of it. The challenge, the biggest challenge is just the mental challenge of making the decision that you're going to do it no matter what. That's the challenge because there's going to be obstacles that come up every single step of the way. We had our lead drop out like 2.5 weeks before the production date. We had our locations locked in like the week of production. We had
stress
crew drop out like, you know, during shooting. And so it's like, but that's a mentality I think everyone that's really serious about filmmaking has to have. And something I've kind of had to develop is like knowing things are going to go wrong. So not being worried if they do, but just putting yourself in the mind space to how you're going to adapt when they do. And I'd say that's probably biggest challenge, like just the right mental space of like making the decision to do it and do it no matter what. And somehow, some way things are going to line up and it's going to work out, but it's not going to be easy. And it's not going to be, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be really difficult, but like making the decision and like seeing it through and doing it, like you have to believe in yourself more than anybody else.
Now that the film's in post, what are kind of the next steps for you guys to kind of make this thing like an actual physical product, like an actual film?
Right. Yeah. So we're wrapping up, you know, color, sound, all these different things. And then we're going to host a string of premieres for it along with other films. And this, it's kind of a mini distribution model we've kind of created like in tandem, which is stressing me out right now, but like, I know it's going to work out. We're hosting, you know, different premieres in different cities that we have kind of connections with, and we're going to just show the film there first just to, you know, get some audience exposure to it. And we're going to do them big, like we're going to have like red carpet, black tie, like all these things, and then show other people's Amazing. Films as well. And then we're going to have a screening in LA as well, and our goal is to invite like the executives and like kind of producers that we've already been pitching the feature to. They're gonna see the short no matter what, but like we'd like to get them in the theater to see it. But if not,
for the full experience,
exactly. Like that's just what it's meant to be. But if not, we're gonna like send things off to them, and they're really excited about us taking a step to do the proof of concept. And like the feature's beefy, and like we had different companies like read it and like really enjoy it. But I can just, there's just a disconnect between the script and the screen. In terms of just like, you know, like imagine trying to explain Tenet to someone if you've seen that without them having seen it. Like you really, it's True. Really difficult. And I'm not saying our film's like to the level of that, but like there's sequences that are like hard to trust someone else's imagination with, if that makes sense. Like that's the first time I've ever said that, but like that's exactly like how it is. Like it's hard to trust someone else's imagination to see what we see when we're writing something, even if we write it as descriptively as possible. It's just a challenge. So us taking a step to do the proof of concept was like, let's make this impossible to, you know, misinterpret, so that when we show it to people, they're going to get the full experience. And if they like it, then they can make a decision to move on it. If they don't, at least they heard us clearly. So that's kind of the next steps for us, is just following up with some pitching that we did with the feature and just submitting and sending it through. And then obviously we'll probably go through a festival circuit as well, but up front, we're just trying to maintain control of like distribution and all that kind of stuff.
Amazing. Well, I wish you guys the best during that process. It's got to be a long process, but it's got to be exciting as well. So I wish you the best during.
Thank you so much. It means a lot.
I got one last question for you, and then we can wrap this up. It's my standard last question. Trying to think back. I think you were roofing. Roofing. You were doing a roofing job. So I guess try to think about when you were back there. You just were interested in getting into video or getting into film. It could also be when you moved and you started working for that, the church. You're sitting across that version of you, and you, where you are now, have all this experience, time, knowledge. What advice would you give that younger version of you as you're about to embark on that new journey, that new transition?
Yeah. Wow. It's like not that long ago, but so much has changed. I would say I wouldn't give any spoilers because I hate spoilers, but I would definitely say trust God more than you think you can, because everything is going to work out and it is going to be okay, but it is going to be incredibly difficult. So trust God that it's going to be okay, because you will not see anything externally lining up or making sense. But if you hunker down, you lean in, you commit to that relationship, and you trust God, like, you're going to be all right. There's going to be things to stress about, but you don't need to extend your energy that way, because it's going to be okay. That's what I would say.
Amazing. Great answer. Dude, thank you. I appreciate you coming on. It was a great time chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate you for, you know, the questions, just the opportunity, and just, you know, what you're doing. I really believe in the platform, the project, and I wish you the best with all your future projects and endeavors. And if there's ever anything you need help with, or, you know, want to just run ideas by, hit me up, bro. Here for you, support you. Anyone that's making strides as a creative, like, I got your back. Like, I got you.
Thank you, bro. Feel free to share any of your social media, wherever you got to share it.
You can follow me on Instagram, YouTube, or my website. Everything's just at Nicosi Roma on Instagram, Nicosi Roma, YouTube, and my website's just NicosiRoma.com.
So thank you for tuning into another episode of the Creative Gap Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, there are a ton of other episodes for you to listen to as well. Check us out on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to get your podcast, you can find it. Also, be sure to check us out on Instagram at Creative Gap for future updates, upcoming guests, and a lot of short clips. For those of you who are new to the show, welcome. Hopefully you enjoy it. And for those of you who have been here for a long time, thank you. So that's all we got for you today. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. We'll see you next time. Peace out.